Okay, good evening, everyone, and thank you for participating in our Midrashah, the third and final shiur for this evening, but each and every week, our amazing Midrashah, which is named for an extraordinary woman, a young woman who, as you know, left our community and left this world way, way, way too young. Our Midrashah is dedicated in her memory, and today was her third Yuletzeit, Daniela Sara Bas Eliezer Yisrael Halevi, Mrs. Danny Graziauer. Danny, or Mrs. Graziauer, was an extraordinary person by every measure. Tremendously humble and modest, brilliant, smart, funny, witty. She had a Yira Shemayim, a tremendous faith in Hashem, and demonstrated it with her Yira Shemayim that she lived with on a regular basis. She was an outstanding teacher. I know my own children benefited from being in her classroom. The level of confidence and belief she had in all of her students, and that she transformed them, and she lifted them, and she made them believe in themselves. The Mesiris Nefesh, the effort that she expressed to make each of them succeed, writing separate tests. What teachers want to grade or write any test? She wrote separate tests for different students, understanding their individual needs. And the list could go on, but we are tremendously honored and grateful to be able to have our Midrashah, our women's learning in our community, in her memory, named after her, as we mark this third Yuletzeit, Daniela Sara Bas Eliezer Yisrael Halevi. We hope that our words and all of the learning tonight and each and every Monday night, all the women's learning in the Danny Graziauer Women's Midrashah, should elevate her neshama, that she's having nachas ruach, looking down and seeing all that learning which is taking place. And I want to express our collective gratitude to the Epstein family, the Graziauer families, for their generosity in enabling all of that learning and all that they do, and for all of their support. We are forever and tremendously grateful. Okay, tonight our goal, in a relatively short time, is to sort through the laws of Borer. See what we did there. Okay, thank you. Laws of Borer are one of the 39 categories of creative labor. The Torah tells us, the Torah doesn't explicitly tell us, in fact, the Torah only names one of the forbidden acts of Shabbos, but tells us we're not allowed to do malachas on Shabbos. Previously, we've shared a general introduction to how do we know what those categories are and what fits into them. I don't want to review the entire thing and take our time now, other than to summarize and succinctly say that whatever was defined as creative labor to build the Mishkan, the great tabernacle, whatever was creative labor to give a house to Hashem, to make a dwelling place for the Shekhinah, is considered creative labor that we rest from on Shabbos. Hashem says, imitate me. It's the finest form of flattery. 6 days, says God, I created, I manipulated the world, I conquered the world. The seventh day I was comfortable with the world, I let nature be. And I want you to do the same. For 6 days, conquer a world. For 6 days, go make a difference in this world. And that seventh day, be at peace with nature. What does it mean to be at peace with nature? We still have to live, we still have to eat, we still have to operate, we still have to walk to shul, we still have to... So how do we know what we're allowed to do, what we're not allowed to do? So our rabbi said, look at what went into building the Mishkan, and you'll know what you're not allowed to do, what it means to be at rest, what was created, what was considered a creative labor to build that structure for Hashem, is the same definition of a creative labor that we abstain from, that we refrain from, in order to connect from Hashem, and in order to connect to Hashem on Shabbos, and to be at peace with the natural world around us. There are lametes malachos, there are 39 categories of such creative labor. There are archetypes, the avos of those categories, and toldos. Each category has subcategories that are the same totsah, even if they're a different pa'ula. They have the same result, even if they undergo a different action in order to achieve that result. So what defines, what was the common theme of all these 39 things? So many of the achronim, many of the commentators explain, what I've always found most meaningful is the following. Whatever is uniquely human, whatever takes human ingenuity, human creativity, human thought, human discipline, that's what you're not allowed to do. What an animal could do, what an animal instinct, an animal impulse, an animal would know on its own to do, that you're allowed to do on Shabbos. So each of these 39 categories we have, first 13 we call Sidur Depas, all the process of making bread, from plowing, planting, and harvesting, and threshing, and winnowing, and ultimately baking, all of these are things that human beings do. Animals eat food that is prepared, that grows from the ground. Animals kill other animals that eat them. But an animal never puts on an apron and goes to a challah bake. An animal doesn't participate in a process of planting and harvesting and winnowing and kneading and so on and so forth. So all the 39 categories are creative labor. They are not just labor. If labor were forbidden on Shabbos, then the Jews of Boca couldn't walk to shul in July and August. You wouldn't be able to move furniture. You wouldn't be able to serve a big meal with lots of guests. If labor were forbidden, labor is not what's forbidden on Shabbos. Creative labor is what is forbidden. And we define creative labor as uniquely human. There's one exception to that rule. Of these 39 categories, there's one where you'll say to yourself, even an animal could do that. Anyone know which one that is? No, that's the one we're going to talk about tonight. But no, totsa'a, to carry from one domain to another, which is why it's called the malacha grua. It's a different malacha, it's a different level malacha than the others, because an animal could put something in its mouth and carry it from a private area to a public area. There's no human ingenuity or creativity. So you understand, this is so critical to understand and understanding Hilcha Shabbos. Because otherwise, what do you mean? I can walk to shul, I could serve a meal and schwitz, but I can't flip on a light switch? Flipping on a light switch takes no work. I don't break any sweat. How come I'm not allowed to turn on a light switch, but I can walk to shul? The answer is, an animal can walk to shul, but it took a human being to invent electricity, to create an electric flow, to close a circuit, to ignite a light, to invent the light bulb. All of that is uniquely human. So all of that is the introduction to appreciate that what we're going to talk about is not just minutiae, it's not just details, it's not there to take away our happiness or joy, it's not there to create arbitrary restrictions. It's all there because there's a system. We're trying to rest from creative labor, we're trying to be at peace with the natural world, we're trying to imitate God by being at rest. So one of those categories of 39 is Borer. It's not only one, actually. There are several categories which all reflect different forms of separating, several avos malachos, but they're really all the same, which is to sort and to distinguish and to break apart is a uniquely human activity. Animals don't do that. It takes human ingenuity to identify the different values, to know what I want from what I don't want, what has value and what doesn't have value, and then to exercise the process of separating, of distinguishing between them is uniquely or is a human ingenuity and is a human act of conquering nature, and therefore it is a biblical prohibition. Borer is an issa d'oraisa. To give it a context, turning on the light is a rabbinic prohibition. Significant, enormous, we are strict with it, but according to most opinions, a rabbinic prohibition. But if you take the wrong jelly beans out of the mixture of jelly beans, you violated a biblical prohibition. If you did it on purpose, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, it was a capital punishment. If you did it by accident, you had to bring a korban chatas. So just understand it in a sense of context. In fact, the Mishneh Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, in his introduction to Siman Shin Yud Tes, to the laws of Borer, chapter 319 in the Shulchan Aruch, he says, we're playing with fire. This is an issa d'oraisa. And many people, because it just seems, what's the difference? Which order I take the jelly beans? If I take the skin off the chicken, what's the difference if I... all the other examples we'll use. If I use a slotted spoon, what's the difference if I... Can I make a French press coffee? What's the difference? It doesn't feel significant, like driving or a light switch or cooking. So says the Chafetz Chaim, because people are lax and people aren't careful, therefore he gives, unlike any other malacha, he gives a lengthy and a comprehensive introduction to set it up because many people are not familiar with it. So the Talmud tells us, and again, we could study Borer in our Smichas Charver program. So grateful to Rav Elia Da Goldberg. Some of the questions and answers we'll share tonight come from that program on Sunday Mornings for Men, a beautiful program. We trace it back to the Pasuk, the Gemara, the debate among the Rishonim, different opinions among the Achronim, among the Poskim. But for tonight, as I've often been encouraged, let's go to the bottom line. Not because anyone here is incapable of that same journey through that process, and we should have opportunities to study in that way as well. But I know that the goal tonight is, what is the bottom line? What can I do? What can I not do? Don't confuse me. Keep it simple. So the Gemara tells us there are three conditions, which if you meet these three conditions, you've not violated Borer. And they are known as Biyad, Miyad, Ocha Mitoch Psos. If I were a real teacher, like Mrs. Grazauer, Skorna Levracha, I'd have a whiteboard and a marker. I'd be writing these three things down. But I'm just a rabbi. I'm not a real teacher. So the three things are Ochal Mitoch Psolas, if you take what you want from what you don't want. So let's say there's a mixture, because this is the classic case of Borer. You have a mixture, a bowl that is a mixture of jelly beans. And you have all kinds of colors in the jelly beans. So you love, let's say, the yellow ones, the popcorn ones. Those are the best jelly beans. Anyone get jelly bellies here? Popcorn ones, they're delicious. You don't like the like black licorice ones. Those nobody likes. No, you don't want those. You accept Penny. They're delicious, they're yummy, they're fantastic. So, good, very good. So that's a perfect example of the subjectivity of the laws of Borer. For me, if I were to take my mixture of jelly bellies, and I don't like the black licorice, so I sit and I take out all the black ones, so I'm left with the rest of the jelly beans. I violated a biblical prohibition, capital crime. If Penny does that because she loves those jelly beans, then it's permissible. At least she's met the one criteria of ochel from solas. So how do you define ochel, what you want edible, from solas? It's not edible and inedible because all the jelly beans are edible. Some consider the black licorice barely edible, but they're all edible. So they're all edible, but there's a subjectivity. What I want is ochel. What I don't want is considered the psolas, is considered in this context what I am dismissing. It's considered the inedible. So three criteria where if I do them, it's not a problem of borer. I have to take what I want from what I don't want. I have to do it miyad, for immediate use. I can't be doing it in advance or for later. And I have to do it biyad. I have to do it without a special instrument for sorting or selecting. If those three criteria are met, it's not borer. What are the three criteria again? Biyad, I can't do it with a kli, with a vessel for sorting or selecting. I can't use a sieve, or I can't use a strainer, slotted spoon we'll get to, and a tea bag we'll get to in a moment, and a fork, is that for selecting, we'll get to. But I have to do it biyad, I can't use a special utensil. I have to do it miyad for immediate use, I can't be doing it for later. And I have to be taking what I want from what I don't want. Which begs the question, the Chafetz Chaim Mishneh Berurah wonders, since when do we have a malacha that if you do these three things, it's not a malacha? If you put it in the oven in this way, at this time, in this whatever, then you're not cooking. No, a malacha is a malacha. If it's forbidden, it's forbidden. Where do we have an example where something that is forbidden, if you do it these three things, then it's not forbidden? Then why isn't it borer? Is it borer or is it not borer? So Chafetz Chaim explains a very important principle. Mishneh Berurah explains. He says, if you meet these three criteria, it's not derech brera, it's derech achila. If you meet these three criteria, you're not engaged in sorting. You're eating every time you eat. If you really couldn't eat, let's say you're looking at the chicken and you cut off the piece of chicken you want to put in your mouth next. So you're taking what you want from what you don't want, so to say. You're doing it immediately. You're about to put it in your mouth, and you're doing it without a special utensil, either with your hand or a fork, according to most, as an extension of your hand. That's eating. That's not called sorting. Nobody watching you sit and eat will say, you're undergoing a sorting, selecting process. They would say, I'm watching you eat, which is annoying when anyone watches you eat. So hopefully they're not watching you eat. But someone seeing a person doing that, taking what they want, putting it immediately, and using without a special utensil would call that eating. When you introduce the special utensil, when you're doing something to plan for later, when you're separating what you don't want from what you want, now you're not eating. Now you're doing derech brera. Now you're doing something in the style or with the intention of sorting and selecting, and that's what is prohibited. So I want to go through and define these three areas a little bit more clearly, and then we'll go to practical examples of borer in our life. Happy to take any questions. The goal is to enhance and to elevate our Shabbos observance in this area in general. So biyad. The first is biyad. So are you allowed to, what does it mean biyad? Do you literally have to do it with your hand? Let's say, you know, you are you lived recently through a pandemic, you're living through a pandemic, and you don't want to touch all the jelly beans to take out the ones you don't want. So you're going to use a spoon as an extension of your hand. Are you now using an instrument? Have you, by the way, you can't just meet one or two out of the criteria. In order for it to not be borer, you have to meet all three criteria. So if you're using an instrument to eat immediately and take what you want from what you don't want, it's still borer. If you're doing it for later, and you're doing it with your hand, and what you want from what you don't want, it's still borer. If you're taking what you don't want, but you're doing it immediately and without an instrument, it's still borer. You have to meet all three criteria to be eating, not sorting. All three have to be met. So it's very important. So according to most, in this context, the spoon or a fork, let's say when you stab the piece of chicken you want to eat next, or you're cutting away the piece of meat you want to eat next, you have a piece of meat, a piece of fleisch, a piece of flank, and a piece of meat in front of you, and you're sitting at the Shabbos table, you're eating it. It's got a little fat, it's got a bone, there's several components to the meat. Maybe it's got a vein, some people eat that, I can't deal with that, so I'm always cutting around it. So again, why isn't that sorting? Why isn't that borer? The answer is, the fork there is not a sorting instrument. According to Reb Moshe, it might be, but I told you I'm not going to do that, so I'm just going to give you some bottom line. This fork in that context is not a sorting instrument. What is the fork? It's an extension of my hand. I don't want to get my fingers greasy and dirty. I can't grab the meat I want well. The fork pierces the meat. So the fork in that context is an extension of my hand. The fork is not acting as a sorting or selecting instrument. What happens in the following other examples? let's say I have a tea kettle, where at the end of the tea kettle, there's a little filter on the spout of the tea kettle, so that if there are tea leaves floating around in my tea kettle, when I pour the tea, only the tea comes out, and the leaves are held back from the filter. Is that considered a sorting vessel? I'm lacking one of the three criteria, therefore it's sorting, not eating. Will that be a problem? So according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, it would be a problem. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman, the Chazon Ish, and Rav Avad Yosef, and others, if you're doing a derech achila, the primary purpose of the tea kettle is to heat the water, make the tea, hold and store the tea, and be able to serve the tea. It happens to have a filter, but it's not a vessel that's designated for sorting or selecting. So technically, they would allow you to do it. However, most people are strict to follow Rav Moshe, if there's a spout at the end and it's holding back the tea leaves, not to use it. Similarly, a salt shaker with rice. We live in a very humid climate here in South Florida in Boca Raton. And some people, because of the humidity, will put rice inside the salt shaker. Somehow, magically, if there's rice in your salt shaker, the salt does not cling to itself. I saw the Kaf HaChaim says that a woman should be responsible for putting the salt on the table on Shabbos, because that will atone for Lot's wife in last week's Parsha, who turned around and turned into a pillar of salt. So we atone for that mistake, that a woman should take responsibility, Kaf HaChaim, which she's taking responsibility in most cases for most of the things on the table, so it shouldn't be a surprise, but that shouldn't be. We should all help, and we should take responsibility, and so on and so forth, yada, yada, yada. So the salt shaker with the rice. So the rice is preventing the salt from clinging. But however, the top of the salt shaker has little holes, and the rice can't fit through those holes. So now when you sprinkle salt, not that anyone's food here would need you to add salt, but if you were to sprinkle salt because you took it in from somewhere else and you had to add some salt, is that sorting or selecting with a vessel designated for sorting or selecting? So again, Rav Moshe would say yes. These other opinions, the Chazon Ish, Shlomo Zalman, Yalkut Yosef, would say, no, you're just sprinkling salt. There happens to be rice. That's not a vessel for sorting. However, the custom, again, is to be strict. Your salt shaker for Shabbos, the custom is to be strict without rice in it. What about the tea bag? The tea bag has the tea leaves in the tea bag. The tea bag essentially is a little mini strainer. It's an adorable, cute little mini strainer. That's what it is. It lets you soak your tea bag in the water. We're not talking about how to properly make tea on Shabbos right now. It's its own subject. Kli shlishi, tea scents. That's also a machlokas or Moshe Chazon Ish. However you make the tea, let's assume that you can make the tea with a tea bag in a kli shlishi, in a third vessel. So I've got my hot water urn, and I release water from the hot water urn into one cup. The hot water urn is the kli rishon on the primary vessel. The water comes out and goes into the first cup, which is the second vessel. I pour from the first cup into a second cup. So the second cup is the third vessel. The urn, cup one, cup two. Cup two is really vessel number three. At least according to Rav Moshe, vessel number three can't cook. Kli shlishi can't cook. And therefore, I could put anything I want inside of it. I could put raw chicken. I could put raw noodles. I could put raw baby cereal. I could put tea, according to Rav Moshe. Not everybody agrees, but according to Rav Moshe, and that is the generally assumed opinion, I think the most American follow that opinion of Moshe, that a kli shlishi can't cook. Anything raw even could be put inside a kli shlishi. It does not have the potency or the power to be able to cook. So I put my tea bag in my kli shlishi, and I got my little string, and I'm hopping and bopping my tea bag, and it's flavoring my water, and my water is now strong enough with tea. Some people leave the tea bag in there. Could have a 3-hour conversation, they're still sipping from the cup, they never took the tea bag out. I never understood that. Tea gets pretty intense, no? Okay, that's the minute somehow. So I like to take the tea bag when it's just, like the Three Bears, when it's just right, when it has just enough flavor of the tea. How do you take the tea bag out? When you lift the string and the tea bag is now held over the teacup, isn't it functioning as a strainer? Isn't that borer? Isn't that borer? So according to Rav Moshe, it's absolutely borer. According to these others, again, this is derech achila, not derech breira. So technically, maybe it's permissible. To be machmir, the general consensus custom is to take the tea bag out with a spoon. Why would it help to take the tea bag out with a spoon? So we'll get to this more in a moment, but when I take the tea bag out with a spoon, have I separated or sorted? No. You know what I did? I took the whole mixture out. The tea bag and the tea leaves had been mixed with water. When I take it out with a spoon, it's still mixed with water. So I put it in the garbage, or I put it on the little plate that'll go in the garbage, and I take it out with a spoon. Well, you certainly cannot do, according to everybody. According to those other opinions, strictly speaking, you probably could take out the tea bag and quickly put it down on the plate. You're not trying to sort anything. What everyone agrees you cannot do, which many people during the weekday do because we're so stingy or careful or positive or negative, however you want to look at it. What's the minhag? Take it out with You take the spoon, you hold the string, you squeeze, you get every last drop out of that tea bag before you're going to put it in the garbage. That is an active process. That's an Issa Doraisa. To use the tea bag and to squeeze out of the tea bag is probably schita, told of dash, it's borer. You could probably check off several things you're doing wrong by doing that. So as tempting as it is, as hard as it will be to not squeeze out every drop of tea from the bag on Shabbos, just let it go. Shabbos, we let it go. Nothing bothers us, even leaving those extra drops in the tea bag. So taking it out and squeezing it against something, that's for sure going to be a problem of borer, a problem of schita, several problems. So again, the custom, the practice that most have to be strict is to use a spoon to take the tea bag out. And by doing that, it's not that you are one of the three criteria. By doing that, you're not even in the same ballpark as borer. Why? There's no mixture. Let's take a step back for a moment. In order to violate borer, you have to be sorting or selecting from a mixture. If there's no mixture, there's no borer. So let's say I have a chumash next to a sitter, next to a tehillim. They're 6 inches apart from each other. If I take one, am I violating sorting or selecting? No, they're not mixed together. But if I have a big pile of books in which they're all mixed, and that's even a question, Sfaradim hold that books can never be in a mixture. Books, by definition, are distinct units. They're never mixed together. But Ashkenazim, they are mixed. And I would encourage you to look in the main shul after Shacharis on Shabbos morning and look on the cart of the custodians when they collect all the chumashim and sidurim, different types of sidurim, and it looks like a big mixture. So if something is a mixture, then it's a candidate to violate borer. If it's not mixed together, if it's not in a mixture, there is no borer. So one of the ways that you can avoid borer is take the whole mixture. So for example, there's a fly, waiter, there's a fly in my soup. Now, if there's a fly in your soup, in my opinion, spill out the whole soup. You don't want to get the fly out and eat the rest of it. So where does it come up more? It comes up, there's a cork in my wine. Someone opens the bottle of wine, and even the great connoisseurs, depending how old the bottle is and the corkage and the cork, can get a little piece of the cork in the wine. So you pour your kiddush wine, or you pour someone a glass of wine, and there's a little bit of cork floating around on top of the wine. Now, you don't want to serve your guest, or you yourself don't want to drink wine with cork in it. What do? If you stick your finger in and grab out the cork, certainly if you're giving that to a guest, it's probably not the best way. If you want to use a fork, it's going to be borer. You're just taking the cork from the wine, which is psoles from ochel. You're taking what you don't want from what you do want. So what do? How do you get the cork out of the wine? If you take a spoon and you take some wine with the cork, you're not in fact separating or sorting. You are indeed taking the entire mixture all together. Not everybody loves this. The Chazon Ish rejected this because the Chazon Ish said, this is a harama, it's a legal loophole. Let's be honest. That spoon with the cork is not a mixture. It's cork. It has a little drops of wine there so you feel better. So, but other opinions, and we follow this, I follow this. Whenever I say we, I'm telling you what I personally do. That's the we. So we follow this, which is that if there's some cork in the wine, you can't just remove the cork. That's borer, biblical prohibition. If you take a spoon, you take out the whole mixture. Take out a little bit of wine with the cork. Take out the fly with a little bit of soup. Take out the whole mixture, and therefore you're not violating borer. So it's only a candidate to be borer if it's a mixture. If it's not a mixture, then you're going to be okay. I'll give you another example where if it's not a mixture, you're going to be okay. I'll give you another example. Yes, please. Yes, you can drink it and spit it out. Fast forwarding a little bit, you cannot violate borer in your mouth. Any separating or sorting you do in your mouth is not borer. Now, that sounds like a magic trick. Like, with borer, like, you're not like, what are you doing in your mouth that's not going to be borer? But think about where it comes up. Eating watermelon. What's the best way to take the seeds out of watermelon? So some brilliant group of scientists somewhere decided rather than cure cancer or diabetes, they invented seedless watermelon. That's not my joke. Seinfeld has a whole routine about which scientist decided that creating seedless watermelon was the urgent issue of the day. They abandoned other research in order to genetically engineer watermelons to not have seeds. I don't know who that was. God bless them. They did it just for the Jews so we don't violate borer. But let's say before then, or let's say you don't have seedless watermelon, you have watermelon with seeds. How do you eat the watermelon with seeds? So, according to some, you take a bite and then you spit out the seeds because with your mouth there is no borer. Let's say it's a choking hazard with the seeds. Let's say that's not so... The etiquette of doing that is not so great. So, according to others, you'd be allowed to remove the seeds right before you eat because there is no other way to do it. You cut open a cantaloupe and you want to serve cantaloupe. How do you get all the seeds in the middle out? You can't say, well, I'll take the cantaloupe from the seeds, the good from the bad. You can't do that. So a general opinion of the poskim is that when there is no alternative, then you are allowed to remove the bad from the good right before and without a vessel. So whether it's scraping away the seeds of the cantaloupe. Now again, we didn't get to this. The miyad, immediately, I'm going out of order, but hopefully you'll get the whole picture here, because this is a mixture this year. So hopefully you'll get the whole picture. So you're allowed to remove the seeds from the cantaloupe because there's no other way to get the flesh of the cantaloupe. But when? When? So let's say you're going to the 9:15 BRS Shabbos morning minyan, but you were up early, so you say, you know what? I'm going to cut up the cantaloupe for lunch now. And then I'll go to shul, 3 kiddushes, 4 bar mitzvahs, a bris, a scholar in residence, and then we'll have lunch afterwards. One thing I know, the cantaloupe will be all ready because I did it early in the morning when I woke up. No good. That's a violation of miyad. You have to only do it for right beforehand. If it's involving the prohibition of borer, you need the 3 criteria. So you could cut up the cantaloupe before Shabbos, or you could cut up the cantaloupe right before the meal, but you can't do it. You can't do it in advance. That would be a prohibition of borer. So there is no sorting in your mouth, be it if you're going to take a bite and remove the seeds. Where else does it come up? Fish. Fish is a big issue in halacha. Fish has tiny little bones. So some poskim say, good, so eat the fish and pull out the little bones. Pull out the little bones. Many say that is a choking hazard. Many others say that is disgusting. There's a lot of reasons that you wouldn't want to do that. So some poskim, you know, this is the origin of gefilte fish. The invention of gefilte fish was because of the malacha of borer. Jews said, there's a big inyan to serve fish on Shabbos. It's a very mystical concept, the idea. Fish symbolically represents certain energies. So there's a very mystical idea of having fish Friday night, Shabbos day, different minhagim, both, one carp, white fish, what do you have? So Jews said, well, what do? We got a malach of borer, can't sort and select, and all these fish have little bones, chutzpah. And on the other hand, there's a mystical idea of having fish. What do? The Jews invented gefilte fish. At least the Ashkenazi Jews invented gefilte fish, which is ground up white fish and carp and whatever else goes into gefilte fish as a way of avoiding the malach of borer. So if you eat gefilte fish, you're good to go. If you're having a piece of fish that has the bones, some say put it in your mouth, pull it out in your mouth, there's no borer in the mouth. Others say you could use the fork in order to pull out the bones because they are a choking hazard and because there is no other way to do it. You can't really remove. Some say you should take the fork and hold down the bone and then pull the fish away from the bone. That's not really so realistic. I'm sure you've seen some people do that. It's not so hygienic, not so realistic. So gefilte fish is a good way to go. Or alternatively, again, many say because there is no other way to do it, you are allowed to pull it away. You are allowed to pull it away. Okay, so back to mixture. So we said the malacha of borer is only potentially violated with a mixture. If it's not a mixture, you're not violating borer. So to get the cork out of the wine, use a spoon. To get the fly out of the soup, use a spoon. What's another example of it not being a mixture? If you would eat or drink it that way anyway. So for example, a Brita water filter. If you have one of those water pitcher with a Brita water filter on Shabbos, I would have thought that is the textbook example of borer. You're going to fill it on Shabbos? How are you allowed to fill it on Shabbos? You hold it under the sink. The sink water is going to run in. It goes through a filter. And after it's filtered, it comes out on the bottom. It's holding back the psolas from the ochel. It's holding back what you don't want from what you do want. And it's a kli. It's a vessel whose whole designation is to sort and select. To me, that would have been a textbook example. You're not allowed to use it. But I'd be wrong. The halacha is you absolutely are allowed to use it. Why? Because since most people, and arguably everyone, even the istanis, even the people who overpay, you know, when they come to the table and you say, I'd like water, and they say, would you like tap water or would you like bottled water? So even the people who say, I would like some bottled water, I don't look at the tap water. If they just came back from a jog or they walked to shul in August in Boca and they were very, very thirsty and they were handed a glass of the tap water, they would drink it. They would drink it. Almost everybody, if not everybody. So the poskim say that since everybody would drink water out of the tap, you just enjoy it more when it went through the Brita, which no one's even sure if it's really doing anything, but they do a great marketing job of convincing you it does. So it's not borer. It's not borer. So in other words, if it's not a mixture because I took out the whole mixture with a spoon, or it's not a mixture because I was willing to eat it when it was a mixture, i.e. the tap water before it went into the Brita, then it would be perfectly permissible. I'll give you a third example where it's not a mixture. One of the areas of borer is setting the table. Setting the table or sorting or selecting through silverware. You have a whole mixture of the silverware together. So how do you sort of select the silverware? How do you set the table? So one of the suggestions that's given. You're not allowed to hold a whole handful of a mixture of silverware after it's been dried, or you take it out of the dishwasher, and you hold it, and you then, let me take out all the forks, then I'll set the table all the knives. That's borer, that's selecting. Maybe you're doing it biyad, and you're doing ocha from solas. It's usually not miyad, it's borer. So what do the poskim say? I take the silverware, and I throw it on the table, and I scatter it on the table, and now it's not a mixture. So now I see them all separate and apart from one another, and therefore it's not a mixture. So there's no prohibition to nullify a mixture on Shabbos. There's a prohibition to sort or select through a mixture on Shabbos. So I can take out the whole mixture and throw it out, like cork in the wine. Or if I would be willing to enjoy the mixture the way it is, like water out of the tap, I'm even allowed to put it through a filter. Or if I have a mixture of silverware, I'm allowed to throw and scatter the silverware. Don't throw it like across the room. I just mean gently on the table so that you scatter the silverware a little bit so that now when you take with the forks or the knives or the spoons, you're not taking them out of a mixture, but there is no mixture anymore. You've nullified the mixture altogether. What is the third? Third definition was miyad. We spoke about taking the good from the bad, which is subjective. Depends for you what's good and what's bad. And we talked about a mixture. How do you define a mixture? For me, the Aruch HaShulchan is the most compelling definition. He defines it as the eyeball test. If you look at it and it looks like a mixture, it quacks like a mixture, it's a mixture. If you're looking at it and it looks separate and apart, it's not a mixture. Why do I say this? Because the halacha goes through all kinds of analysis of these mixtures. For example, clothing in a drawer. Clothing can be called a mixture, depending how neatly folded and organized your closet or your drawers are. Many, you know, throw everything in, stuff it. If you can't see it, it's neat and clean. If you pull open the drawer, it's a big mishkabibble mixture. So how do you take what you want from it, take what you don't want from it? It could be considered an issue of a mixture. So how do you know what's a mixture, what's not a mixture? Books in a pile, they're a mixture. Books on the bookcase, are they a mixture? Silverware, when are they overlapping in a way they're a mixture? When are they separate and apart? Aruch HaShulchan talks about the eyeball test. If you look at it, it looks like a mixture, it's a mixture. If you look at it and you see distinct separate units, then it's not a mixture. Then it's not a mixture. So come back to the clothing case because it's a perfect example of miyad. We said you have to be meeting three criteria. Not using a utensil, doing it for the taking what you want from what you don't want, and doing it for immediate use. So let's say you're packing up the baby bag. You're taking the little baby to the park for a walk. You're going out for the afternoon, 2, 3, 4 hours. You're going to go to a friend's house. So you're packing the baby bag, several changes of clothing, because who knows how many times that baby will need to be changed. So let's say that clothing, though, is all in a mixture. When you're going to take out the next onesie, you're going to take out the next clothing, and it's all mixed together, that could be a problem of borer that's not miyad. If you're going through to change the baby into it right then, so then it's biyad, miyad, ocha from solas. You're meeting all three criteria. The baby's dirty, needs to be changed. You go to the mixture of clothing in the laundry box or the drawer or in the baby bag, and you pull out what you want, then you've met all three criteria. But if you're taking from the mixture to pack the baby bag to go out for 3, 4 hours to the park, that's not miyad. Now you're not doing it for immediate use, and you'd have a problem of borer. What if you're going to someone else's house? So someone says, could you bring the salad? We'd love to have you for lunch, but could you bring the salad? You say, sure. So you figure, you know what, I'll assemble the salad in my house before I go over to the neighbor's house. Now, salad could have a problem of borer. The outer leaves, if the outer leaves are rotten, the outer leaves are no good and you're pulling them apart, you could have a potential problem of borer. The whole head of lettuce is considered a mixture, and pulling apart the rotten from the good is selecting or sorting. That's a problem of borer. So you're going to do it not with a utensil, you're good to go. There's no way to get to the good leaves without pulling apart the bad leaves, so you're good to go. But the third criteria of miyad, is that called for immediate? So the halacha is, no, you'd have to bring the lettuce to your friend's house and assemble it there, because otherwise it's not miyad. Now you can either assemble it before Shabbos, and then you're ready to go, but to do it at your house before you ever go to where you're going to have the meal is missing, lacking that third criteria called miyad, that's too far in advance, and that's not called doing it for them. So how do you define doing it for immediate use? You have to eat within 1 minute, 5 minutes, 30 minutes. How do you define? So again, the poskim say, what's considered reasonable or normal for the next meal? What's reasonable or normal for the next meal? So clearly, if you're doing it before you go to shul, that's not for the next meal. On the other hand, in Boca, you could have meals that go on 3, 4 hours. So you're going to sort or select before the meal for dessert. Dessert's not going to be served for 3, 4 hours. Is that called miyad? The answer is yes. Because that's for the upcoming meal, even if the dessert or that course of the meal won't be served until much until much later. It's also considered miyad if you're improving the food right now with it. So let's say you want to cut up a fruit salad, yummy, yummy, for the fans of the Wiggles out there. Anyone know the Wiggles? Nobody knows the Wiggles. Oy, the Wiggles, the great Wiggles. So fruit salad, so you're going to cut up the fruit salad, but the fruit salad, if you cut fruit salad and serve it immediately, it's not nearly as delicious as if the fruit salad can sit for a little bit, marinate and stew and enjoy the company of all these fruit getting to know each other. So in order to make the fruit salad to be optimal deliciousness at the meal, it means you have to prepare it this far before the meal. That's called miyad. Even though it's not right before the meal, it's the length of time that's reasonable to prepare it where it'll be at its optimal presentation, deliciousness, for the meal. That is called miyad. So even this miyad, this third criteria of miyad, what's called right before the meal, has a certain level of subjectivity to it, and it depends what's called right before the meal. I'll give a couple more examples. I'm happy to take any questions. I could talk about boder all night, but the hour is getting late. So let me give a couple more examples. I'll take questions if you have any. You open a yogurt container and there's water on top of the yogurt. Can you spill it out? Tuna fish. It's a whole separate discussion. We'll do a midrashah later this year on how to open cans, packages, bottles on Shabbos, what you're allowed to open, not open, how you can open it. So leaving aside the question of how you open the tuna can right now, let's say you open the tuna can. So the minhag is to take the top of the can, push down on the tuna, and get rid of all the tuna liquid. So all you have left is the tuna. Is that boder? You're taking the liquid from the salad. Are you allowed to pour it out? What are you allowed to do? So both in the case of the yogurt and the tuna, poskim say, if you leave a little bit of the liquid with the yogurt or with the tuna, then you've not separated the mixture. You've left the mixture intact. So you're right. If you squeeze out every last liquid from the tuna, then you've pressed against it, you violated, you took what you don't want from what you do want, you turned the can into a vessel, an instrument of sorting, selecting, you're missing the criteria. But if you leave some liquid with the tuna, even if you spill off most of it, then you've maintained the mixture. As long as you've left the mixture, it's not boder. So again, the premise, the prerequisite to boder is that there's a mixture. If you either take out the whole mixture or you leave the mixture, then you haven't done boder. Boder is when you've selected or sorted such that there is no mixture left at all. Oh, so the French press is a problem for other reasons, but what about pour over coffee, like filtered coffee? So are you allowed to put one of those, you know, has a name? Melita? Melita. Nice to meet you, Melita. Never heard of her. Okay, so you have this plastic vessel. It goes on top of a coffee mug. It has a filter. You put coffee grinds inside, and then you pour hot water over it, so then it drips, and you essentially have freshly brewed coffee on Shabbos. So for the coffee snobs out there, who I don't drink instant, or I don't even drink the Starbucks V, that not for me, I need this. So the coffee snobs, can you have a drip coffee on Shabbos in that way? So the halacha is, the halacha is it borer? Why not? So the Gemara talks about this, not in the case of coffee, which was only discovered after the Gemara, but the Gemara talks about it in the case of wine and wine sediment. There used to be sediment in the drink, in the wine that they drank. So what if you had sediment, you want to pour water over the wine sediment to essentially flavor that water? Would you be allowed to do that? So the Gemara says it's a problem because the assumption there is that the sediment is wet. But let's say it were completely dry, like coffee. What do they call it? Coffee ground? Grinds? Coffee grinds. So the coffee grinds, so they're completely dry coffee grinds. So when you pour water over them and they drip into a mug, have you separated anything? No. Water went in and water came out. And nothing got separated. Just plain water went in and flavored water came out. Therefore, it's permissible. You do have to use a kli shlishi. Because again, remember, you might be cooking. The coffee grinds are raw. Unlike instant coffee, which was previously cooked, and ein bishel achar bishel, there's no cooking after cooking. But the coffee grinds are raw. So you have to use a kli shlishi to pour the hot water over it to make the drip coffee, but it would be permissible to make the drip coffee in that way. What about peeling bananas, peeling fruit? It's pro-boder, it's a mixture of the fruit and the peel. So again, the poskim say there's no other way to get to it. So since there's no other way to get to it, it should still only be done miyad, right before you're going to consume it, and biyad. So can you use a peeler? Can you use a vegetable peeler? So Rav Avad Yosef says a vegetable peeler is just a fancy knife. He says, yes, vegetable peeler is not an instrument for sorting or selecting. It's a fancy knife. If you're allowed to, you remove the peel because there's no other way to eat it, then it's okay. Other poskim, most poskim say a vegetable peeler is the definition of an instrument for sorting or selecting. It is forbidden. But there are times you can use it. So for example, if you would ordinarily, you eat cucumber with the peel, when you're removing the peel, that's like the water in the water Brita. Since you'd normally eat it with the peel, we don't consider that borer. If you'd eat the carrot with the peel, which I think fewer people eat, everyone peels a carrot. But if you would eat the carrot with the peel, then similarly, it's not considered a mixture. So there is an enormous level of subjectivity to the definition of borer, both the definition of a mixture, the definition of ochel and psolas, the good and the bad, and the order in which you need to take it. Okay, so see, these are some of the overarching ideas and some of the practical applications. Let's see, any other practical examples I did not get to? Any questions about borer in everyday life? Slotted spoon. Let me just talk about the slotted spoon. Is the slotted spoon an instrument for borer? So according to most poskim, it is, because it's not a regular spoon. If its goal was not to separate or sort, it would not be slotted. It would just be a regular spoon. It is slotted because it is meant to be selecting. So poskim say, if you have cucumber salad, coleslaw, and you put the slotted spoon so that people don't have all the extra liquid on their plate, to use it and hold it and let all the liquid drip out of it is a problem. But the Shmir Shabbos says that if you use the slotted spoon quickly, in other words, let's say you're too lazy to go get another spoon, or there is no other spoon, or somebody put the slotted spoon and you're a guest at their home. So if you use the slotted spoon in order to separate or sort, it's a problem. But if you use it as a regular spoon, meaning you lift and you serve quickly, then it wouldn't be a problem. So the Shmir Shabbos says, the slotted spoon, again, there's some subjectivity to how you use it. If you use the slotted spoon as an instrument for sorting, it's a problem. If you use the slotted spoon to quickly serve, first of all, how could you say you sorted? You took the mixture. The very fact that you didn't stand there and let all the liquid drip out of the cucumber salad or all the liquid drip out of the coleslaw because you served it quickly means that you served the whole mixture. You didn't sort from the mixture, and therefore, according to them, it would not be a problem if you serve from it on the quick side. Okay, any questions? Yes. Right. Correct. So first of all, Yom Tov has a little bit different laws. We didn't get into it tonight, but I'm glad that you're raising it, and maybe we'll do it at a different point in the future. Because on Yom Tov, Ochel Nefesh is permissible, on Yom Tov there aren't 39 categories of creative labor, there are 38. The category of cooking is permissible on Yom Tov. You're allowed to cook on Yom Tov. So how does that apply to all the other categories? Let's say the borer is for the purpose of cooking. You're not allowed to shecht, you're not allowed to kill on Shabbos. But what if I want to shecht in order to be able to eat on Yom Tov? Then you would be allowed. So the other categories, in that they contribute to that category called cooking, are permissible. So how would you apply borer to Yom Tov? It depends. Things that you could have done before Yom Tov, you should have done before Yom Tov. If you can't do it before Yom Tov, or its flavor would be enhanced by doing it on Yom Tov, then it would fall into the exception or the exemption of Ochel Nefesh. You'd be allowed to do it on Yom Tov. Aside from which, even on Shabbos, you could crack open a nut. Because there is no other way to get to the nut, you'd be allowed to crack open the nut, and it would be permissible even to use a nutcracker to do it. Okay? Thank you very much for participating in the Women's Midrash Shah. Have a wonderful evening.